Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, do you ever feel nostalgia creeping into your mind?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you get nostalgic for?
Well, you know, every time I hear like the tinny strains of an old 20s tune, I start feeling like I need to do the Charleston. Nope. I remember the days back where there were talkies.
No.
Talkies ruined everything.
No. But yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible that you could feel nostalgic for that. Say, if you were introduced to a lot of, say, old-timey movies when you were younger, your nostalgia could conceivably sort of skip back through time, and you could have sort of an artificial nostalgia of a time from before you existed.
I do have an affinity for that time period, yeah. But I will say that having a kid, I definitely have experienced nostalgia more deeply than I probably have ever in my life.
Because you're observing the child at a certain age, and you're thinking back on your own existence at that time?
Just because time seems to pass so quickly, and there's so many beautiful moments. Mm-hmm. And then there's this idea, actually, we're sort of defining nostalgia right now, but it's that idea that you have a resurrection of a memory or a feeling that carries with it sort of a bittersweet feeling because you know that time has passed, and you can never retrieve that moment again. And it was a beautiful moment, right?
Yeah. As a lot of people point out, nostalgia tends to hit you in a way where it feels a little good, but not like, whoa, amazing. It feels a little sad, but not in a like a deeply depressive way. It's kind of this ambiguous, overall positive feeling.
Yeah.
But it's kind of all over the place. You know, like I found myself experiencing nostalgia probably a lot more recently, and we'll talk about that as we go here, but. I find myself like thinking back to music that I listened to when I was in high school a lot. I find myself re-exploring Tool albums, and I still like Tool to this day. But I was really into them back in high school, back around the time Anima came out, and And so I'm listening to that, and I'm feeling and I'm enjoying the songs, and I'm feeling nostalgia, and I'm thinking about reading Lovecraft for the first time and mm-hmm. discovering this music. And so on one hand, it's like a celebration of these things that I still love. I still love Lovecraft. I still love this music. But then I'm also think it also makes me think or even subconsciously go back to that time. And it's weird because on one hand, it's like, I don't really wish I was a high schooler again.
No, you don't.
Like that was a weird time and there are so many things were out of place. And yet there's something in me that's kind of reaching back there or something from the past feels like it's phantom limbs are coming after me in the present.
Well, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to this idea that this idea of firsts and nostalgia, because they seem to be pretty well connected.
Yeah.
And perhaps a reason why we continue to dwell in this realm of nostalgia. John Tierney, writing for the New York Times, says that most people report experiencing nostalgia at least once a week, and nearly half experience it 3 or 4 times a week. Erica Hepper, she's a psychologist at the University of Surrey in England, found that nostalgia levels tend to be high among young adults. This is really interesting, too. We'll get into this. Mm-hmm. And then dip in middle age and rise again during old age. And that nostalgia begins as early as age 7.
Well, what do you have to be nostalgic about at age 7?
You do, because I think that you have this awareness that you're getting older.
You're like, oh, man, I was just thinking the other day about pooping my pants. And it was like such a good time. I'm so nostalgic for those days.
Well, you know, like even my 4-year-old will sometimes say, I don't want to get older. I don't want to grow up, because she has this sense that she's moving beyond time and she's moving beyond phases mm-hmm. and that there are other things in front of her. So it doesn't surprise me that it's as young as 7 that kids start to look back and pine for some sort of warm and cozy memory.
You know, it's interesting that we are talking about nostalgia after just recording an episode on the Ouroboros, the world-consuming serpent, the eternity mm-hmm. snake, the eternity dragon, because that is a creature that is curving around and consuming its beginnings, and in doing so, creating this cyclical nature of itself. And in a sense, nostalgia is that. We are reaching back into the past and feasting on our beginnings. And it seems to fill us with some sort of energy.
Well, and we're recycling our memories. That's interesting, because I was thinking about this in terms of materialism. Like, this is one of the reasons I think that nostalgia has taken such a hold in the United States, at least in the last 50 years or something. Mm-hmm. You know, ever since Coke started serving up this idea of Santa Claus and all these sort of classic warm memories post-World War II, because that's a way that you can easily access that nostalgia, right?
It could
be music. It could be merchandise. And I was starting to think about how, in some ways, our existence for each of us, it's almost like we're living on a movie lot, and we just kind of roll in all these props that kind of make us feel more connected to whatever it was or is important to us in our lives. And a lot of that has to do with nostalgia.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, like you said, the advertisements constantly changing, the culture, at least the visuals of it, and also the technology of it constantly changing. And therefore, we have all of these obtainable physical and or visual symbols that we can call to feed that nostalgic hunger in us.
Yeah, I was thinking about the new iPhone commercial. Have you seen this?
No.
It's basically just people hanging out with their phones and going through old texts or conversations or pictures and feeling nostalgic. And I thought, well, this is interesting, because they've taken this phone and sort of made it a stand-in for the repository of your memories or nostalgia and connected it that way.
It sounds like a horrifying episode of Black Mirror.
It's supposed to be poignant.
Well, it sounds dark. In fact, you might even say that it sounds a little sick. And you wouldn't be the first person to think that nostalgia sounds a little bit like some variant of mental illness.
So, yeah, I didn't realize this until I started doing research that nostalgia was actually considered a psychiatric disorder at one time. According to Dr. Clay Rutledge, writing for Scientific American, there's a Swiss physician named Johannes Hofer who coined the term nostalgia in 1688 to describe what he considered a cerebral disease unique to Swiss mercenaries fighting wars far from home. He thought that nostalgia caused anxiety, insomnia, irregular heartbeat, and disordered eating.
And he also thought it was caused by continuous vibrations of animal spirits through fibers in the middle brain.
Yeah, it was like this big mystery. I mean, people were like, "Oh, this nostalgia. You got to be careful here. Let's not play any of these tunes because our soldiers are going to go into a deep depression or funk."
Yeah, what's the matter with these guys? Something must be wrong that they're not enjoying fighting this war and risking life and death far away from home. Why do they keep getting all sentimental about a simpler time back in a place that they know and love? That's just sick.
This was really interesting. This is a New York Times article called "Nostalgia: What Is It Good For?" It says that military physicians thought that it had to do with the soldiers' eardrums and brain cells being damaged by the unremitting clanging of cowbells in the Alps. So it was, you know, obviously this was not a well-studied area.
Yeah. I like to imagine the study that might have happened, though, where you have two test groups, one exposed to alpine cowbells and the other not.
Right, yeah. I know. So is it the cowbells? No, it's not at all. And this persisted, this idea, really into the 20th century. And professor of history at Weber State University, her name is Susan J. Matt, she said that this disease of nostalgia was known about in the United States during the Civil War, and there were 74 deaths from it on the Union side and more than 5,200 cases in the Surgeon General's records. And it became such a problem that they banned army bands from playing Home Sweet Home.
Hmm. Now here's one of the... something that occurs to me out of these examples. For starters, okay, nostalgia. The things I feel nostalgic about, like, and I think a lot of people do, like, nostalgia tends to apply to things that, by and large, don't matter in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you like the feeling you feel for, say, a departed loved one that has died, like, that, it's not nostalgia. That's like a deeper, more close emotion, you know? But nostalgia is a little harder to classify. It seems like two things need to happen for you to feel nostalgia.
Yeah.
Either your physical surroundings have to change. You have to travel somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And in olden times, why would you travel a long distance? Especially if you were not particularly into the idea. You would do so because you were engaged in a military conquest of some kind. Or what has to happen is the world around you has to change. It has to, the music changes, the advertisements change, the technology changes, etc. And then you feel this nostalgic link to a place that doesn't really exist anymore. So I wonder to what extent in previous ages it was harder to feel nostalgia because you weren't necessarily going to ever leave the area in which you lived. You know, you'd be more or less surrounded by the same places and the level of technology, the level, you know, the basic aesthetics of the world around you would more or less remain intact.
No, it's interesting, especially for agrarian-based societies, right?
Yeah.
So 10,000 years on, we primarily have just been in the same place, except for when you begin to think about a place like the United States of America, which is a very young country and a country that many people emigrated to, and people continue to move around, and that's sort of an American thing, is that you find your survival by sort of picking up and going doing something for yourself that's new in a new area, new possibilities,
yeah.
Right? The gold rush, so on and so forth.
We encounter that on Facebook all the time. We all have that friend who's had a tough time, and they're like, "That's it, I'm moving, leaving to a different city, going to start over somewhere new." And that's the idea in itself. You know, I'm going to change my physical surroundings, and in doing so, I will change who I am.
Well, the Susan J. Matt, the professor of history, she was actually saying that in that way, that nostalgia became a very un-American emotion. Because not only did it have this association with this psychiatric disorder of and people who had come back from war, but it was this idea that was opposed this whole, like, manifest destiny,
yeah,
that you need to not feel homesick, that you need to pick up and move and begin your life anew. And so she was saying that it was very interesting to see the ways that it's represented in American culture, and really in American culture that... nostalgia doesn't truly get embraced until after World War II. And she says that much of that can be attributed to the fact that during World War I, they began to better understand nostalgia, and they began to better understand that people who came home who were depressed and who had anxiety had signs of the newly established syndrome of shell shock, not nostalgia.
Huh. You know, in a sense, the idea of nostalgia as a negative force, it does make a lot of sense, because in a sense it is looking back to the past, clinging to the past instead of moving forward and welcoming new things. So I can easily see where it could be interpreted as a negative force. And if you were nostalgic for things that are harmful, either like say, hey, man, I really miss cocaine or something, you know, like that would be bad nostalgia. Or when you see like people who are really into, say, images of sort of an imagined antebellum South, you know, mm-hmm. that can be kind of disturbing as well. Like you're kind of nostalgic for a thing that didn't quite exist the way you think it did and was really kind of a horrific time.
Right, which kind of gives you that whole idea that, again, memory and the way that we construct our world is unique to every single person, right? We just sort of all agree on a set of conditions to say, hey, this is how we're defining the world, but everything else is up for interpretation. But it does turn out, and we'll talk about this after the break, but it does turn out that nostalgia actually is a good thing by and large because it helps to regulate our emotions. That being said, I'm going to go get nostalgic for some talkies and a carton of cigarettes.
All right.
A kid.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Uses directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back.
We've been talking about nostalgia. We talked a little bit about toxic nostalgia, but for the most part, this is a positive force in our lives.
It is, and we should probably scratch at what actually characterizes the experiences of nostalgia. Dr. Clay Rutledge, who I talked about before, his research focuses on how the need to perceive life as meaningful impacts mental and physical health, close relationships, and intergroup relations. So, of course, he's very interested in nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And he says that these memories tend to be focused on momentous or personally meaningful life events that prominently feature close others, so friends, family, romantic partners, family vacations,
yeah,
road trips with friends, weddings, graduation, birthday parties, gatherings for the holidays. All these sorts of things are these cherished experiences.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, just thinking about family trips, I instantly think of family trips to the beach and, like, oysters, like raw oysters with cocktail sauce and saltine crackers.
There you go. Yeah. See? So now, if you were one of the participants in one of his studies, that's probably what you, or one of the things that you might have written about.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Rutledge found with the participants is that when they were writing about their nostalgic experiences, and when someone went through and sort of weeded out everything else, they found that there were many more positive emotion-related words used than negative emotion-related words, which I thought was interesting because it's come up before that we tend to have better recall and use of negative words than positive ones,
mm-hmm,
in general. But here's this case where you have just a outflowing of positive words, kind of giving you a hint as to where this is going in terms of your mindset.
Yeah. So researchers have looked at the causes of nostalgia, and they found that there are a number of things that can kick it off. Social interactions, so like you're getting together with an old friend and you're talking about, hey, remember that teacher we had in college? And the next thing you know, you're nostalgic,
mm-hmm,
for some, either a particular experience or some sort of fragment of that time. Sensory inputs. Music. You hear an old song and you're like, oh man, I haven't listened to this in forever. Nostalgia. Or a smell. And we've talked before about how with smell, that kind of undercuts our conscious labeling of experiences. So we'll smell something and we'll suddenly be nostalgic for something and we don't even necessarily remember what we're being nostalgic for, but that smell will take us back to sort of a general time frame. Tangible objects, of course, old photographs,
mm-hmm,
you know, somebody's old watch, somebody's old wedding ring, you handle that and it'll take you back.
An old iPhone.
Wow. I mean, people do get nostalgic about their technology. Like, one of the nostalgia trips that I have found amusing, I interviewed a guy who is really into it for the blogs, and I've gotten into it a bit, too, is VHS nostalgia. Like, when we were done with VHSs and we moved to DVDs,
mm-hmm,
like, we couldn't, most people just couldn't get rid of those VHS tapes soon enough. Just dump that. We have
it's
a better
true.
Technology around. But now people are really feeling this this flood of nostalgia for, in my cases, a lot of it is the films of that time and the kind of look and sound that they had, the digital film scores. But then some people are like really hardcore nostalgic and even obsessive about the technology itself. They're buying old VCRs, fixing them up, they're collecting tapes, sometimes spending kind of crazy amounts of money on what to any other eye would be just a beat up piece of discarded technology.
Well, you hear the same sort of thing in the recordings of music sometimes, like people
yes.
prefer to hear the scratchiness or
mm-hmm.
just the imperfections as opposed to everything that's edited out and so clean. You know, I think that was one of the chief complaints of going from a record player to a cassette player.
Yeah, the distortions and the imperfections of the sound become a part of what we loved about them. Two artists in particular, musical artists. There's a musical artist named Tycho, and then, of course, Boards of Canada. Both of these groups, especially Boards of Canada, really employ this nostalgic, audible nostalgia for sounds that are sort of distorted, old
mm-hmm.
electronic soundtracks, this kind of thing. And they weave all these things together, like take the things we're nostalgic for and boil them down to their basics and then reassemble them into a new sonic form. And then so you're taking it in. It's a new thing, but at the same time, it is heavily nostalgic.
Yeah, I have to say, with an accordion, I just feel that. I mean, and throw in a theremin,
yeah,
and I'm just a puddle.
Before this is through, you will tell us something you're actually nostalgic for.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding about that at all.
All right. Maybe you are a time traveler.
Yeah.
A time lord, even.
Right. Don't tell anybody.
All right. So those are some of the things that cause nostalgia. But in these studies, a negative mood was the most commonly reported cause of nostalgia. And and generally, loneliness was the most frequently listed negative emotion that led to nostalgia.
Yeah, which led to the researchers positing that psychological threat was the culprit for digging into the past and using nostalgia as a kind of balm. Mm-hmm. And of course, how did they do this or bear this out? They triggered a sense of loneliness in their participants. They had one group who, after completing a questionnaire, were told that they scored high on loneliness. And then they had a second control group, which they said that you don't rate very high on loneliness. Uh-huh. And then they asked all the participants to complete a measure of nostalgia. And it turns out that participants in the loneliness condition reported being significantly more nostalgic than participants in the control group. And then Just to make sure that this was really going on, they had another study in which some volunteers read a story by a supposed Oxford philosopher who wrote that life is meaningless because any single person's contribution to the world is, quote, paltry, pathetic, and pointless. And, of course, the idea here is that there's a theme that threatens perceived meaning in our lives. And then they had another group read a neutral story. Again, it was those people who read about life being meaningless who indulged in nostalgic thoughts and feelings.
Hmm. Well, I compare this to my own experiences because right now I'm not in a lonely state of mind or a depressed state of mind, but tomorrow evening, mm-hmm. My wife and I are flying to China. We're going to pick up our son, and we're going to be there for 2 weeks, and it's going to be kind of stressful, and it's going to be like a life-changing event. So I feel a certain amount of like anxiety about that. Mm-hmm. I feel a lot of intense excitement about it, and then also just like, you know, 7 simultaneous heart attacks here and there as I think about it. And so I can only assume that a lot of my recent nostalgia, as opposed to just sort of general nostalgia, has maybe risen out of that.
It's possible. I mean, yeah. Do you find yourself kind of, not that we need to get you on the psychologist's couch here or anything, but do you find yourself kind of accessing childhood memories?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially when it comes to purchasing books for the child, mm-hmm. and looking at toys, and then, you know, I'll think, oh, I had this book. He's like, oh my goodness, I don't have a copy of the Starbelly Sneetches in the house.
Yeah.
I had that as a kid, and then maybe that's why the Starbelly Sneetches have come up in like 3 different podcasts recently, because I keep thinking back to the things that influenced me as a child as I consider this child coming into my life.
Yeah, it's possible. Your son is very lucky, by the way.
Oh.
Thank
you.
Yeah. All right. I didn't mean to get all verklempish. We can tell, there are definitely benefits here to indulging in nostalgia because it does kind of make you feel as though perhaps you are recentering your universe of meaning just by accessing this information and reframing what's going on in your current life, right?
Right.
Now, from the journal Current Directions in Psychological Science, a paper by Clay Rutledge again, says that nostalgia serves at least 4 key psychological functions. I'm talking about generating positive effect, elevating actual self-esteem, which was sort of a surprise to me, fostering social connectedness, and alleviating that existential threat that there's no meaning in life, right?
Indeed, the social connectedness thing really interests me because, of course, you think about nostalgias, and other people are inevitably going to share your nostalgia. I dare anyone to give me an example of something they're nostalgic for that nobody else on the planet feels that pull towards. Like, I mentioned like the VHS thing. People feel nostalgia for that, and so there are whole communities where they talk about trading these tapes, they talk about the technology, and certainly with any kind of music or media or art, people are going to gather around it. They're going to draw these sometimes forgotten artists back from obscurity and celebrate them again. So no matter what your nostalgia is, you're going to find a community of people, especially online, that share it, and you're going to feel this intense connection with people like, hey, we're team VHS, or we're team, old Beatles albums. I don't know. Whatever your nostalgia is.
It's true, right? Yeah, you're right. There's sort of a more universal, we all feel this way and we're all connected in that way. But there's also like, you know, maybe someone was involved in watching this movie, this particular VHS movie with you. And mm-hmm. then you think back about your connectedness to that person as well.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting, too, that self-esteem was involved in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rutledge did a number of studies that bore out that self-esteem, again, perhaps this connectedness or this sense of accomplishment was the underlying reason for that self-esteem.
And it again brings me back to this idea that we no longer reside in like the same community in the same place and share the same sort of general social group anymore. We move out, we move to new places that are, and those places themselves are constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
So you reach to things like old VHS tapes or old music, and those become sort of the social connection with a surrounding that earlier people would have had just by being in the place that they call home.
That they were, right.
Yeah.
And which makes me think about embodied cognition. We talked about mm-hmm. this embodied cognition, this idea that things or even putting on a certain kind of clothes would affect the way that your brain behaves and the way that you think. And so then I was reminded of this study that we came upon about feeling warm when you indulge in nostalgic thoughts.
Yeah.
And this was a study, or rather an experiment, in the Netherlands by J.J. M. Vingerhoots of Tilburg University. He and his colleagues found that listening to songs made people feel not only nostalgic, but warmer physically. And then, this is where it gets kind of even crazier, Zinyu Zhu of Sun Yat-sen University tracked students over the course of a month and found that feelings of nostalgia were more common on cold days.
Huh.
And they found that people in a cool room around 68 degrees Fahrenheit were more likely to engage in nostalgia than people in warmer rooms. And of course, as a result, they felt warmer.
Huh. Well, I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that every time October rolls around, I often feel like a lot of nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm getting into Halloween season, so I'm getting nostalgic about old Halloween celebrations of the past and old bits of Halloween-themed media. But also, the temperature is changing, so perhaps.
Yeah, I actually start to think about certain foods and experiences, too, that I've had.
Start thinking about fall foods and winter foods and all that.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is an interesting perspective. Psychologist Tim Wilschut says that if you can recruit a memory to maintain physiological comfort, this idea that you would feel warm through this memory, mm-hmm. He said that at least subjectively, that could be an amazing and complex adaptation. It could contribute to survival by making you look for food and shelter that much longer. So presumably he's talking about in an evolutionary sense.
So one might be out in the wilderness trying to find a place that can sustain them, and they are in the process sustained by nostalgia for a place that sustained them, or even just a thing that sustained them.
You're right. It doesn't even have to be like, oh, our ancestors needed, mm-hmm. They were out in the wild. It could just be that you were on, say, a long hiking trip, and yeah. you didn't pack as much water as you needed to, or food, and you needed to go back into your memories to get that sort of warmth. And, again, that idea that there is rhyme and reason for what you're doing. There's yeah. some sort of grand master plan, and nostalgia helps to recenter that reason for living and meaning.
And it's so crazy how some of the things we feel nostalgic for, I mean, there are things that we're nostalgic for that at the time we were kind of indifferent to, mm-hmm. like VHS distortion, distorted sound or distorted imagery. That was just part of watching a VHS tape. No one thought anything special about it. You might think, oh, well, that's kind of weird or neat. But now it's the thing we feel the pull towards. Or I think back to going to church, going to a Baptist church when I was a kid, and we would sing all these hymns, and I hated the most of the hymns. I mean, some of them were fun to sing, I guess, mm-hmm. but for the most part, I did not have a lot of love for Leaning on the Everlasting Arms. But now I hear it, and I get kind of nostalgic for it. And even though it's not something that I like consciously had a lot or any love for at the time. So and I think there are a lot of examples of that in people's lives. You're suddenly nostalgic for something that really didn't matter all that much back in the day.
I have an example of that too, and it's hearing football on a Sunday. I hated hearing it when uh-huh. I was little because it usually meant that my dad was going to be sort of like tense and like perhaps even yelling at the screen sometime. But now I hear it, and it just makes me feel, again, like fall is upon us. There's going to be popcorn. Yeah. There's comforts and security there.
Yeah, and all those delicious foods too, like cocktail weenies and the red sauce.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's what made me become a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So along those lines, there is, of course, the nostalgic bump, the reminiscence bump to consider in kind of a cultural sense.
Yeah, this is an interesting article by Katie Walden, writing for Slate Magazine. The article is called Mysterious Memorable 20s, and it's an interesting article because it talks about a person's 20s being a no man's land between childhood and stable adulthood, and perhaps the reason why there is something called that reminiscence bump, where you have a ton of these memories and nostalgia packed into that time period.
Okay, so as you move forward, you think back to that your 20s, and that's an area that's just rich in influences.
Yeah, because it turns out that we just remember more events from late adolescence and early adulthood than from any other stage of our lives. So there are a couple of theories about that. There's a 1988 study by Cohen and Faulkner that found that 93% of vivid life memories concern unique or first-time events. And between the ages of 10 and 30, there are a lot of firsts, right? So that's, mm-hmm. that buys into this idea that you're encountering the first time that you rode a bike, the first time that you drove a car, that you kissed a girl, that you kissed a boy, that you had pizza, that, you know, all these are firsts. But then after age 30, it all kind of gets a bit rote, right? Like, well, you still have experiences.
It depends what you didn't check off the list during that first period, I guess.
It's true, but most things that mm-hmm. you encounter just in living become rote. So you really do have to go after those new experiences after that certain age, right? When you're 30, you've kind of done most of what everybody else has done. But the idea there is that you're just chock full of firsts, and that perhaps is the reason why we have so many memories or nostalgia available to us then. But then you have this guy, David C. Rubin, who comes along in his book, Remembering Our Past, and he says only a small portion of the memories that constitute the bump, this reminiscence bump, relate to novel experiences. So that gets you to this idea, another theory that jumps in here, that it's identity-based and that there's a narrative perspective here and that it's kind of all flowing into the story that we make of ourselves. And this story is really ripe between those ages because that's when we are becoming who we are becoming.
Right, and we're thinking about the person we're going to become. We're looking back in the rearview mirror on the person we've been.
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, Katie Walden, the writer of that article, cites an study by Judith Gluck and Susan Bluck. Yeah. And they have proposed that there's a convergence of three qualities that make an event indelible in our minds.
Okay.
So the first one is that it has to be joyous. Two is that it allows us to exert control.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this identity making.
This is the thing that makes me who I am. This is like a part of me.
Yes. And mm-hmm. three, we perceive it to be highly influential over the course of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of fits into this narrative identity-based account of ourselves, right?
Like on some level, like when I'm thinking back on these different things I'm nostalgic for, I'm mm-hmm. saying, hey, I'm a tool guy. I am a VHS
yes.
guy. I
yeah.
am a... leaning on the everlasting arms. I mean, in a sense, I mean, I guess I'm nostalgic for it because I do look back on the things about being raised in a Baptist church that have shaped me and some of the aspects of that that remain with me to this day.
See, and I think that theory really does kind of line up really well with why we concentrate so many of our memories and nostalgia during that time period.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, I have some friends who could have cared less about high school, but I have other friends who are like, oh, it was great. And for them, during that time, there were certain things that really helped to identify who they were as a person.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense.
Well, I guess that's it.
Huh. I'm already feeling nostalgic about this episode.
For this episode.
Yeah.
We only just finished it. And that's the way it is with nostalgia. Something happens, and then before you know it, you're nostalgic about it. It seems like just the other day it was a new experience.
That's right. One that built our identities and made us feel all warm and cozy and gave us a little uptick in our self-esteem.
Yeah. And again, it's like the Ouroboros. It's the snake. It's moving forward in time, and then at some point it turns back around, and it goes back to its point of beginning, and in that sense becomes eternal.
Here's my little outro question to you.
Okay.
Do you think on a generation ship, and I think I've seen this depicted somewhere, so this is not an original thought.
I'm on a spaceship. We're headed off to a distant planet. It's going to take generations upon generations of human lives to get there.
How much nostalgia and what types of nostalgia, let's say the generation ship leaves tomorrow, do you think we'll be on board? Does Beyonce make it?
Well, Beyonce is easy to bring, either in musical form or Frozen.
She will have her own generation ship. Thank you very much.
I could see, I mean, in a sense, some of these cultural figures, they would kind of become like gods. And I mean, you could argue they already are our modern gods and our modern avatars. So I could see them being important. But I wonder if you were on a generation ship, particularly if it was a generation ship that wasn't particularly earthy in its design,
mm-hmm.
we would quickly become far more nostalgic for the many details of life here on Earth, some of the simple things, you know? Not necessarily even the big things like, you know, mountains and gravity, but the smaller things like, you know, pigs. I don't know.
Yeah, and would it become just completely ridiculous, like instead of just going to the coffee maker on the generation ship, like there was such nostalgia for coffee that you'd have your own beans that you would pick out of civet cat's poop?
Yeah, possibly so. Or would you become maybe nostalgic for things like pencils, you know? Why would you have a pencil on a generation ship? It'd be something you could never have again. Like, when would you get around to recreating pencils on another world? You wouldn't.
I think you're right, and I think there would be this whole, like, pencil economy on that ship. You know, it would be like, people would have them in glass cases.
Because, yeah, you'd have to make them from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, it would require a crazy amount of effort.
Or just print them out.
Or print them out, yeah. But that's the thing, too. If you had 3D printing and nostalgia coming together, that would be almost a dangerous combination. Because every little nostalgia trip, you'd be like, oh, my man, I remember pencils and pens. I'm going to print out every possible variation of pencil and pen that I encountered. Got to do the mechanical, got to do the normal, got to do the thick one, got to do the colored pencils, got to do the ink pen that had three different heads in it, and you would click them, the one with the flashlight in the rear.
Well, what else are you going to do on a generation ship anyway, right? Which means that generation ship, I see how this is going, is going to be completely weighted down with junk, and it's not even going to make its destination because we've all turned into a bunch of hoarders.
Or we're having to jettison nostalgia junk like every week or so the flight from Earth to planet X becomes just this trail, this rat trail of droppings, like nostalgia droppings just floating in space to mark our passage.
Yeah, that would be more likely. I see that.
Well, there you go. Nostalgia, what it is, what drives it, some of the science behind it. Obviously, everyone out there listening to this episode has something to contribute on this. What are you nostalgic for? Particularly, what is the nostalgic force that is either most interesting to us or most sort of weird to you? Like, what's something you're nostalgic for that you, again, didn't even really like all that much back in the day, but now you identify it as a part of who you are? Let us know about all that. You can find us in all the general places. We're on Facebook, we're on Tumblr, we're on Twitter. Our homepage is stufftoblowyourmind.com, and there you'll find our blog posts, our videos, our audio podcast, as well as links out to all of our social media embodiments.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.